This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 11 years, first online and now as a podcast. We cover what's new and interesting, and we filter out all the BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to hear at length from people and companies who are making a real mark in the industry with new ideas or just old-fashioned hard work and smarts. You can listen to episodes online, get it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to pull down the RSS feed. I know a lot of our listeners fire up episodes while they're stuck in traffic or taking the dog for a walk. We now have a companion podcast called Projects, hosted by my longtime industry buddy Michael Tutton. That show is all about digging deep on the creative and tech behind landmark projects like the Cosmo Lobby in Las Vegas. You can find that at dsprojects.podbean.com. 69 is sponsored and gratefully supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. I've been trying to get Chris Regal for an in-person interview for almost a year, but the CEO and sole owner of Stratacache has been a busy puppy in recent months, expanding his business organically, but also through acquisitions of competitors like Scala and Real Digital Media. We couldn't make it happen when he was on one of his frequent trips through Toronto, but we managed, ironically, to carve out time in Amsterdam at the IIC trade show. Regal gets into a lot of things in this podcast, notably how his company got to north of $500 million in sales in 2016, and how he plans to double that within a couple of years. We also talk about how he got started and how he manages a high-growth company that now has some 400 people, but is very much centered around him. This is a seriously smart, ambitious guy with a great wit and not much of a filter when it comes to things like talking about a company he sees as the real enemy. Listen and learn. Thanks for taking the time.
For sure.
Maybe let's start with where the company came from. When did you start it? And you've gone from a company that maybe not a lot of people knew about in the last 3 or 4 years, being certainly the biggest player and the most active player. Now you're buying other companies and everything else. So where did you come from?
Yeah, so I started my first integration business in high school in 1988. Grew that from 88 to 99, 2000.
There was no money in selling drugs, so you did this instead?
My male modeling career never took off. So I had to try to make an honest living. So
why integration?
I was building PCs in my bedroom at age 9 and 10. So a tech nerd from the beginning.
That's what got the chicks.
Yeah, exactly. If chess club and debate club weren't enough, the Women of Digital Signage calendar will be coming out later this year. But the footprint around kind of understanding technology, I grew up in the networking era. Mm-hmm. So I remember Cisco before it was Cisco. I remember, you know, Novell and Microsoft back to the very first days of networking. When you started in that early, understanding networking systems and building, and then growing to, wait a minute, what are we using these networks for? Originally they're transactional, then they started to become more media aware, mm-hmm. and the media aware networks then start to build into digital media networks. You look back into the late 80s where you had digital networks in a 7-Eleven. They were broadcast networks, but you saw the foundation really 30 years ago of this industry. You know, Scala's 30 years old mm-hmm. this year. Mm-hmm. This stuff's been around a long time. Peter Cherna with Scala was telling me one day that Scala was founded by Commodore refugees.
Really?
And okay. You know, so they're all ex-Commodore guys. I said, what we figured out was that you were rendering triangles for a game, but rendering triangles for a game then became rendering triangles for a digital sign. And the amount of kind of DNA that came into a number of these companies from gaming, from media, mm-hmm. and you now populate this kind of unique DNA in an industry that's growing very, very rapidly.
And when did Stratacache form?
I spun Stratacache out as a division late 1999.
And that was doing like caching engines and things like that.
Yeah, right? We start really with media acceleration.
Okay.
So using caches to put media closer in a retail environment. Media at that point was really thin media, principally training or some form mm-hmm. of light consumer interaction. But we were distributing media for one of our first large customers in media distribution was Walmart, where we were distributing content for PRN.
Okay. So
it was kind of an obvious point to say, well, wait a minute, we see what these guys do and we could probably do that better. You know, there's an opportunity there to enhance.
I didn't realize your history went back that far with Walmart and PRN.
We started working in the Walmart network roughly 2003.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the software side of the business came through because you bought a French company, right?
Yeah, we bought Activia in 2004. Mm-hmm. They were based in Nice. They were a really interesting company that had really spun out of the French equivalent of DARPA, so a deep research project. Yeah, yeah. Bought them in Nice and then said, you know, I want them closer to our core North American market, moved them to Montreal. Great. Montreal's a tremendously strong development city for software and
media development. Guys from Nice didn't want to move to Dayton, Ohio?
No, you know, we gave them three options, Dayton, New York, or Montreal. But with Montreal, because of the Canadian government research and development grants, it's a very good place to develop software. And you've got big gaming, a number of really good, talented, plus, to a certain extent, between us, IUTA, Broadsign, Telecine, you've got multiple kind of digital signage pockets there too. Mm-hmm. So it's a good little area, but great development talent coming out of the universities as well.
Mm-hmm. And you were kind of under the radar for a good long time, like you're out there, you had clients and all that, and it's really been, like, what triggered all the growth other than just hard-ass work?
So I'd love to say that it was great insight that we had to the market, which is true to a certain extent, which is that we recognized this was a services business and a business where you're serving the marketing customer as opposed to the IT customer. I get the question, Scala, when we bought Scala, we were roughly 25 times their size. Well, why were you 25 times our size? Because we know how to sell to marketers. And in that footprint of saying, I have a rule that we train all of our salespeople, it's called Sutton's Law. You've heard of Moore's Law and Metcalfe's Law. Mm-hmm. Sutton was a bank robber in Illinois in the 30s, and he was in prison, and a reporter asked him, Willie, why do you rob banks? And his answer was, that's where the money is. From a digital signage perspective, why do you sell to marketers? Same answer applies. You look at where that spend is, global measured media spend is $1 trillion a year.
Yeah.
That is a multiple of global IT spend. And the ability to say, for an average CMO today, I think it's about 40% of the average CMO's budget is spent on technology. Mm-hmm. CMOs need help in that execution because they're not technology. Marketing versus IT is the classic left brain, right brain challenge.
Yeah.
But IT is always about cost reduction. Marketing is about improving results. So if you're able to go in, demonstrate a technology, show specific statistics, in our case, many of the largest brands in the world, hey, you put this in and you can influence the customer. In a large, mature business, if I can drive a 2, 4, 6, 8% result, it's a huge, huge revenue enhancer to that client.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you've been successful because you can talk that language versus a lot of the people I run into in this business, they're still selling a dream, they're not selling results?
I was in a top 20 brand 2 weeks ago for a half-day presentation. And we're in a room with marketing people on one side of the table, IT on the other side of the table. We spent 3 hours talking about the mission. And we wrap up the meeting and they say, you didn't really talk about the technology once. And I said, yeah. Well, why? I said, because you're a top brand. Mm-hmm. You're coming to us. You know that we've worked with top brands globally. You expect it to work. I don't need to tell you pixel resolution or cable type or the output of my media player because you don't care.
Yeah.
You're focused on the experience and the consumer's experience, and we're focused on making sure that your vision is executed at scale. Mm-hmm. That's what the client wants. That's what the client expects. It's gone are the days of, I have this really great HDMI extender kit that you should look at. The client doesn't care. And if you're selling that way, you're not going to survive.
Mm-hmm. Has it grown easier to demonstrate the return because data is more readily available? There are more analytics tools out there.
Customers now understand data mining. Mm-hmm. They understand big data. They understand predictive analytics and a lot of the things that we do there. I think the biggest thing that's helped is that as the cost of visual displays has come down, these are more ubiquitous. You walk into a McDonald's, you see digital menu boards. You walk into a Walmart, you see digital signs. You walk into a Target, you walk into a Lowe's, you walk into a pick an environment, you're going to see digital communication. I know from serving many of these very, very large brands, the exact precise numbers of the success in the background, mm-hmm. and the technology does pay for itself. You're dealing with companies that are not fools by any stretch, mm-hmm. very, very sharp operators, and it drives a result. They can measure that result, see that result, and say, you know, I might be in an environment where to build a new store is going to cost me $20 million, but I can put digital in place for $200,000 and have half the impact of building a new store. So how can I, retailers are great, many of the markets that we work in are great about sweating that physical asset. Mm-hmm. If I bring digital in, I can solve a number of my problems for visibility, for customer interface, for customer service, I can better connect with millennials, I can solve a number of problems with a piece of equipment and an experience that I don't pay $15 an hour, that's yeah. never off sick, that has a consistent messaging capability, can turn on a dime and probably knows the customer and their buying patterns or what they might be interested in better than the customer knows themselves.
Mm-hmm. You got a question at this summit yesterday about QSR and how QSR is relatively simple to do. You're putting prices on a board and off you go, and maybe there are regional variations or whatever. You talked about McDonald's, and you were talking like in millions of transactions
yes.
on a day-to-day basis.
Yes, 75 million plus unique menu presentations a day. The perception is, you know, the corner bagel store in Brampton, Ontario,
yeah.
that changes their menu once every 3 months or 6 months.
Yeah.
That's really simple. That's the market that some of these low-cost embedded, very simple features have to work and find. That's small
yeah,
and medium business.
You don't want them anyways, go for it.
Again, the Sutton rule, there's no money there.
Yeah.
You get into large chains that have mobile apps that do deep, deep analytics on their customer patterns. You're gonna do some very, very specialized and highly targeted work to try to optimize that yield. Again, mature businesses, if I can move the needle a couple of percentage points, that's a big number mm-hmm. when you're talking mature business.
And why are there so many content changes or using analytics to make a determination of size of lineup? You know, are they doing dynamic pricing?
So without getting into customer confidential.
Without getting into
points,
trouble.
Without getting into trouble. there's within a number of our large customers, and we serve 7 of the top 10 retailers, 5 of the top 10 QSRs, mm-hmm. they understand that the product, if I'm in a QSR environment, if I'm going in for breakfast, the crowd that's there at 6 in the morning is different than the crowd that's in at 8
yep.
or different than 10. It's all breakfast, but they're different strata of people in at that time period. If I know the patterns from some of the work that we're doing now, like on artificial intelligence and deep learning, I can build corollaries and then test those corollaries very rapidly mm-hmm. and see the impact. Those types of corollaries that tie in pattern, product selection, product velocity, weather, day of week, there's literally so much opportunity with artificial intelligence to discover patterns that a human may never see
right.
and then quickly test and fast fail, it works or it doesn't, and then just continue to evolve. These are kind of lean startup thoughts of I build a hypothesis, I test it, can I get a 0.2% yield for this one? Great, mm-hmm. let's try it, let's take it to fleet. Great at work now, let's try our next optimization. The customers that are successful with this type of technology aren't there that say, I'm focused on giving birth to the baby. Once the baby's born, you gotta raise that and optimize consistently. The deployment of the network is just the start of the journey. Mm-hmm. And too many customers focus, all right, we've landed on Normandy.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I've gotta fight my way to Berlin to get there. It can't mm-hmm. just be declaring the victory at that point that, yeah, you've taken the beachhead.
And some of the content that you're doing is not necessarily wildly changing things. I suspect it's probably as subtle as moving a pricing or a particular item up on the menu list so it's higher in the choice list.
Could be different location, could be different font size. Think of digital signage when properly executed as, you know, the dark Jedi arts. These are the droids you're looking for with the hand mm-hmm. wave. You're trying to convince the customer that what they came in to look at and came in to buy, there might be an opportunity to consider something else.
Yeah.
And can I get you to incrementally spend instead of $4, $4.50? Or you're going into a transactional grocery store environment. Hey, did you know we have a special on this or that? All I want to do is slightly modify that behavior and get that customer to just spend incrementally a little bit of additional dollars, and that has a huge impact
right.
in mature retail.
Do you get a sense among the companies who you would regard as competitors that they're having those sorts of conversations?
I would say, without sounding crass or arrogant about it, the companies that we regard as competitors are the guys who really understand marketing and marketing at retail. Mm-hmm. So you take potentially an Adobe who understands that market specifically. In sector, I don't really see much competition there, really for two reasons. One, this kind of deep retail practice that we've built around PRN, the expertise that we have there, really unique in the industry. Number two, when we go into provide solutions to customers, we'll go into very large retailers, we're building that network, financing that network, and doing a managed service over the course of 3 years, 5 years. There's not a competitor in the space that will do the type of financial models that we will.
So you're carrying the paper on the hardware?
We'll carry the paper on the hardware, the service, everything.
Okay.
A retailer has deep pockets, but little dinosaur arms, or they won't reach into those deep pockets. We call it the T-Rex problem.
Yeah.
Within that footprint, operational capital is available, but CapEx up front, you run a return on invested capital model, they're gonna spend CapEx on building new stores.
Yeah.
That's the logical play. When you get into the environment of saying, I need to drop $100 million, $200 million up front, and I'll have a five-year recapture, I'm privately held, I'm a sole shareholder, I can kind of do whatever I want there. And in that model, that's not a model that when you see some of our competitors that are publicly traded companies, Wall Street hates things like that. So there's a niche and there's a really good opportunity. I think today we have in excess of $500 million in managed network services in the dirt that are paying against that footprint. I hope to double that to $1 billion, $1.2 billion in the course of the next 12 months, because that managed services business is predictable revenue, allows you to grow a very, very good business. Mm-hmm. And the retailers that we serve are all A-list credit risks. So it's a very, very safe investment.
There's a bunch of costs involved in putting this podcast together, so I'm very grateful for the support this podcast will get from our new and sole sponsor, ScreenFeed. Here's founder and CEO, Jeremy Gavin.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. As content people, we love great content, and we think Dave's doing a great job with this 16.9 podcast, which is why we've offered to sponsor it. If you'd like to see the content that we create on a daily basis, head over to screenfeed.com and check it out. Let us know if we can help you in any project you're working on. And do me a favor, if you don't find what you're looking for, shoot me an email at jeremy@screenfeed.com. I'm always interested in new ways we can help. Now back to the podcast.
You mentioned being north of $500 million in terms of annual sales.
Yep.
I will talk to other people in the business who would say, is Regal serious? Is he actually doing that kind of money? And I say, well, that's what he's telling me. And they will try to run it through their heads and they can't quite get there. So how do you get there? It's the service money?
I think it's the managed service long-term contract. I've had competitors that will come to us at the booth and say that, and say, don't hate the player, hate the game. The business model of being able to go out and hunt very large projects, being able to be successful, and then building that repetitive customer, that growth customer environment, the deals are certainly out there. And as I said in Florian's event, 3 to 5 years ago, a big deal was $10 million. The last 2-3 years, that's a big deal is $200 million. I'm tracking deals now that are $750 million to a billion. The market is maturing, the opportunities are maturing. We're simply in the right place at the right time with the right skill set. We're not gonna win them all, no question. But you don't get into the Hall of Fame batting 1,000. If I can bat 400 in that footprint, that's a huge, huge business when you're chasing a $1 trillion measured media spend and the ability to carve out 3%, 4%, 5% of that bigger number.
Right. And part of the way of doing this is being heavily vertically integrated, right?
Correct. Yep.
So you just pretty much own the whole chain.
There are certain things that you need to control because they're strategic. Media players, we want to be able to control because it's strategic. It's important as a platform. It causes you a lot of problems if it doesn't perform well.
Right.
Displays are increasingly becoming strategic because your competitors are your suppliers in a Samsung and an LG. So you're never going to walk into an environment. Every customer has to have some form of display.
Yeah.
Table stakes. When your quote-unquote partners are in there selling their own platforms, it makes for very interesting dialogue at times. So the more that you can vertically integrate, the better. do I go into the designing amounts business? No. There's some things that are simple commodities and you can streamline around that. When it goes into strategic points in our PRN division where we have full media ad sales teams, or media trafficking teams, where we have the billing, servicing, the accounting, in Dayton where I have a 200-seat network operations center that runs 7x24, our own class 3 data center. Mm-hmm. There are very strategic investments that you can make for the long term and control your own destiny, which is a good thing.
And there would be a lot of thought amongst perhaps some of these larger customers that, well, why wouldn't we talk to Samsung or LG, sure, those kinds of companies, because they're very big, we're familiar with them and all that, they must be able to do this.
I always kind of joke, there's the right way and then there's the Korean way. Mm-hmm. And I say that in a non-xenophobic footprint. They're very, very good manufacturers. They're lousy service companies. Mm-hmm. And this is a services business. The amount of work that we do on service operations, on maintaining the care and the feeding and the media trafficking and running these networks for customers. A hardware vendor is interested in the wham, bam, thank you, ma'am hardware sale.
Yeah.
And they're gone by the time that check has cleared. You're seeing now in one of those two some pretty significant customer losses globally because of their quality problems. You know, they're having recall problems in many of their product lines, including commercial display. If I'm saving $100 on a commercial display, but then I have to do 3 recalls on it in the field, all you're making is
a TV branded as prosumer.
Because you're competing in an environment where you think that cost is the ultimate decision, and there's upfront cost and there's cost of ownership of the life cycle of that platform. If I save 5% upfront, the networks that we're deploying, I have to live with for 3 to 5 or 7 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to cut my own throat by putting in garbage and ending up with huge field maintenance expenses. We have 2.1 million devices in the field, almost 750,000 of which we actively manage for customers. I'm not going to take a suicidal tendency and put garbage out in the field that I then have to live with. So we're going to be much more careful.
Right.
And then as it translates to customers, Mr. End Customer, you can buy X or Y. Here's the risk with X. Here's the benefit of Y. You make the decision. Mm-hmm. If you want to buy that hardware platform, great. But we'll try to guide you towards what does make sense and what will be your lowest and best option from the cost side.
And you've said to me in the past that watch out for China. That's going to be a big, big problem for the Korean companies, just the way that Koreans were a problem for the Japanese.
I mean, the Japanese started the LCD industry. The Koreans have taken over as the dominant suppliers, and LG and Samsung are both very strong, very smart companies, great manufacturing capabilities, but the Chinese are coming. And today you don't have balance in the force because Samsung and LG arguably control 80% of that marketplace. You're seeing now a resurgent Sharp with Foxconn. You're seeing very significant Chinese interests coming into this marketplace. Mm-hmm. And you'll go from that managed cartel of the duopoly that's there today back to open competition. To end customers, it's going to be a great thing because your display costs will lower, which means displays are that much more ubiquitous. And for a company like ours that sells software, players, and services, the lower the cost of display, the better it is.
Easier to sell. I haven't really seen Chinese LCD display panel companies coming into the market in a big way. Is it kind of passing that by and going straight to direct view?
I think the Chinese were smart in, they're very strategic thinkers. So you see Layard with Planar for the last 18 months starting to really make a name in that specialty display area. With Foxconn buying Sharp, Foxconn is scary big, scary smart, highly vertically integrated.
Workforce, something like that.
Exactly. Yep. And when you're the company that builds tens, if not hundreds of millions of iPads, iPhones, consumer devices, you've got your manufacturing down cold. Yep. I understand that business. That type of competitor is what will bring some balance. When an LG and a Samsung were competing against each other, or competing against the last remnants of the Japanese, the Panasonics, the Sonys of the world, mm-hmm. there was no real competition there.
Yeah.
Now you're seeing competition inject back into the marketplace, which is good.
Mm-hmm. From your perspective, I mean, I've been writing the last couple of days and looking at all these companies that are using SoC as opposed to external media players, and everybody's going that way. When we've chatted, you've been a considerable skeptic about that.
Yeah, I would say LG and Samsung love the idea. I think that any software vendor that puts their platform onto SoC is signing their own death warrant. You go to the LG booth here, you go to the Samsung booth, and it looks like one of those cattle feed lots mm-hmm. with their partners. Mm-hmm. In the LG example, you have 14 or so vendors, each with 2 foot spaces.
Yeah.
Half of which I know, half of which I've never heard of. And you can go down the
Pretty
line
girls
and say,
at the dance.
Exactly. You're 5 euro a month, the next guy's 3 euro a month, you'll do a euro a month, or have 50 cents per month for SaaS. And they just bid against each other.
Yeah.
It absolutely positively liquidates the value of those software brands, mm-hmm. and you're a commodity. When Samsung and LG came to us, and when Samsung and LG were working with Scala, well, do you want to be part of our partner program? I don't want to be one of 15 or 20. You get the brand value of access to our customers.
Right.
What do we get in return? Nothing. And you damage that brand fundamentally. Above and beyond the fact, Samsung and LG keep their own software on those players. And if that, you don't like Signage Live or SmartSign, well, we can give you tragic info again and come to our hosted centers. Mm-hmm. You've let the Trojan horse in the front gate. Don't be surprised when you wake up in the morning and all your troops are slaughtered.
Right.
It's fundamental strategy miss.
Mm-hmm. What about the more pure idea of an embedded display with having the smarts on the display? Does it really matter to the kinds of customers you're working with?
Think about it this way. If I'm a procurement officer for a large company, the Hudson's Bay, let's use them as a straw man. If I buy glass as a commodity, and my player's external, I could buy Samsung 1 year, LG the next, AUO the third, Sharp the fourth. I have no extended ties that would keep me from being in a competitive environment. But year one, I buy Samsung. Do you think your year two price on Samsung is gonna get better? Because they know they've got you mm-hmm. at that point. A buyer in that environment is making a tactical mistake yeah. as well.
So track back to some of the acquisitions that you've made. Yep. You went for a bunch of years without doing acquisitions, arguably, obviously you did with Activia.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next one was PRN, correct?
No, actually, so Scala was our 10th acquisition.
Oh, okay.
We bought Activia in 2003, 2004. We bought Omnicast in 2004. We bought Superlumen in 2006. Bought what became Optica and Primacy in 2007, 2008. So it's been a pretty consistent.
So you've actually done none of this yourself. You just bought all this.
I'd love to say it was that easy. We bought companies that were what I'd call, in every case, a diamond in the rough. You look at a PRN. PRN, when it was owned by Thompson, great company, arguably invented the concept of measured media and building media sponsored networks in retail. Mm. Thompson didn't want to be in that business anymore. We buy the company. We're in it less than 4 months, and it's cash flow positive, the acquisition price. We've grown that company. It's a strategic asset to yeah. us. You take some of the businesses like Vertigo or RDM, again, really good opportunities to buy good companies that mm-hmm. need focus, need assistance, and then where we have huge support center, data center, logistics center, I can take that to a Ken Goldberg at RDM and say, Ken, you can expand your business without having to spend the $50 or $60 million in capital that we did
right.
to build that asset. You bolt on to our service platform right away. And for Ken, all of a sudden it's more runway, it's more opportunity to drive services business to those customers.
And does it also help you because you're a guy who, I think the last time you told me you're traveling like 48 weeks a year or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, pretty close.
And I know when I've been involved in a project that you were after that, one of the concerns that I raise is you are all-encompassing, and what happens if you get hit by a bus?
Yeah, if you look at kind of the division CEOs that we have in place, so Joe Sullivan at Scala, Kevin Carboni at PRN, Ken Goldberg at RDM, we've really built a very, very deep bench of mm-hmm. very smart guys.
And is that purposeful because you need to address that?
I mean, I'm still young enough that I plan to live forever. That being said, because the Star Trek-like transporter doesn't exist, I can't be
yes.
everywhere at once. I'm in Amsterdam all this week. There's 6 or 7 really key meetings going on in the US this week that I've got those trusted lieutenants. I can say, hey, I need you to be here, I need you to be here. And I know they'll take care of that mm-hmm. with no problem. It's really the maturing of the business.
Yeah, and when I would talk to you like 3-4 years ago, you wouldn't have said that you had people you
right.
could just like handle that.
Well, I mean, Russell Young, who's been in the industry for
yep.
10, 15 years, Russ is our sales VP and leading mm-hmm. that sales effort across the companies. He knows the way I think. He thinks differently, but uniquely.
It's scary.
Yeah, exactly. But I can put him in a...
You get him counseling?
Exactly. It's still post-traumatic stress disorder for him, I'm sure. But you can put him in a sales environment, and he knows the strengths of the company, can communicate that extremely well, mm-hmm. and can be that delegated killer that you need. And from the Stratacash perspective, we invest extremely heavily in our people. When you look at others in the industry, and not to say it in the wrong way, our people are very smart, very well compensated. Coming to work at Stratacash or Scala or PRN, it's a great job. You know, every time I talk to people, they're like, I love what I do.
Yeah.
And that's in a tech business, if you're not attracting the top talent, if you're not building those great teams and building an environment where they love the challenge, you know, we're over 500 million now. In 2 years, I want to be over a billion. That's a great challenge. It's a great thing
you
to be able to grow.
You guys are going
to
get you there.
Exactly.
You can't be an incubator for sales talent.
I mean, there's a lot of salespeople in this industry that we all know mm-hmm. who have worked for 10 different companies in the industry and
yes.
never sold anything in any of them. A lot of the opportunities that we see are bringing new talent into the industry, and we've identified a couple of very, very good sources of talent to bring in sales killers that are not in this industry today but can quickly modify to it.
I would think that coming from outside of the industry would be a big benefit.
It can be, but you also have to get them over the hump of some of the great idea factories that are out there, where not everyone is Walmart from a retailer perspective.
You were talking about yesterday about flagship stores and how you talk instead about the store of the now.
I crack up every time. We drive our retail practice around what we call the store of the now. Mm-hmm. You have one flagship store in
Times Square,
New York or Rodeo Drive, but that doesn't move the needle for mass retail. You've got to be able to be impactful across the fruited plain, and that one store walk gets a press release and you can win the Golden Lion at Cannes, it doesn't make a financial impact of benefit to the company.
Was the Scala acquisition a long time in the works?
That's a great question. We stalked Scala for probably 5 years. we used a lot of
driving back roads of Scandinavia.
We use a lot of military terms. We commonly say that I want our salespeople to be SEAL Team 6, not regular Army. You parachute in, you take the target, and you go. In the Scala environment, we had pursued Scala for a couple of years. The Scala went through a process in late 2015 to sell the business. Mm-hmm. I'd just like to personally thank John Ryan for screwing that deal up. Hello, John. That opened the door for us to walk in and to do the deal. So we were in a good position to convert at that point and wrote a check and bought the business.
This wasn't serendipity. This was a long, long time in the works.
This industry, this business, I've got a good 20 years left in me. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. It's a 14-round super heavyweight title fight.
Yeah.
You've got to take punches. You've got to be able to give them. But there's not going to be a quick, absolute win. And for every two companies that depart the space, three come in.
Yeah.
So at our footprint, there's no one, to my knowledge, that at our size executing globally. Mm-hmm. We're going to do nothing but accelerate that and keep our foot on the gas and grow the business and grow the business mm-hmm. profitably. And at the end of the day, if this is a $30-40 billion year industry, and I can grab half that revenue on a global basis, I've done a pretty good job.
Happy fellow. When the Scala deal happened, and particularly with RDM happening and mm-hmm. the way that played out, is the phone ringing all the time now? Hi.
I've gotten a lot of new LinkedIn friends. and it's usually you start with a LinkedIn conversation, then a week later it's, hey, could we meet at an industry event? And then 2 weeks later, we're looking at strategic options. Mm-hmm. There's 3,200 companies in this space on the software side globally.
3,200.
Inside Stratacash, we have a group called MI6, which is our intelligence division. Mm-hmm. I have the luxury of having every one of our competitors in the US and most major markets, I have their balance sheets. I could go into great detail about that. I won't for the purpose of this discussion. I know who's making money. I know if they've lost money, how long their headcount.
Can you send me that file?
We'll talk about that one later. But with kind of our deep intelligence mm-hmm. org, you get a chance to look at that market. Many of the companies that are in this sector are zombies.
Dead companies walking.
But there are some real diamonds in the rough. An RDM from our perspective of great, good leadership, Ken, super strong guy. Good customer mm-hmm. base.
Not a big headcount you had to absorb?
Not a big headcount. We bolt them into our services org. So you take RDM technology, put it to the Stratocast services platform, and that's a growth opportunity. You just see companies that are have been in the industry, and if they're salvageable, great. I look at just under 300 deals a year all across the globe. 95% of those, you do a quick read, mm-hmm. No, this is dead, no interest. But you get great exposure to the marketplace, and you can see very quickly what does and does not work. Mm-hmm. If we can't build a sustainable 40% gross margin in a line of business, we're not gonna be there.
Yeah. And you bought another company, I don't think it's been announced, right? It was Lyft?
Yeah, so we bought the Lyft convenience store network from Verifone in December.
Oh, and there is screens and convenience stores?
Just over 6,000.
Really, okay.
So within our PRN division, we're doing more of these industry horizontal networks. Oh, so Lyft okay. is the basis of our C-store network. You'll see in the coming weeks a couple of other additional acquisitions and other verticals where you'll see the battle plan very, very specifically. But C-stores are a really interesting sector for us strategically, and it's a global execution. A C-store in Mexico is not materially different than a C-store in New York, yeah. than London, than Tokyo. High margin, great push for product, many of the same products globally, and it's an environment that a tremendous amount of retail revenue moves through.
But there's so much roadkill. All these carcasses of companies that are like NGN going back to sure. 1999 yep. that tried to do that, and why is it different now?
Lyft is a very unique asset because they have access to scan data. So mm-hmm. based on what you're buying,
okay.
you're doing predictive analytics on what you might be interested in that environment.
So it's just not media knucklehead saying, we'll put a screen in, we'll give you part of the revenue.
Any environment that someone says they're going to build a network by selling eyeballs, it's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. I get that there are media networks for pure eyeballs, but you have to help a merchant solve the problem of selling mm-hmm. more product. That's where the fundamental value is.
So you're sole owner?
Sole shareholder, yes, sir.
I've asked you this once before. You could probably go to a very large company and say, look what I got, and sell off and go be drunk on a beach.
I could. I don't drink. Sometimes the industry would drive me to drinking, but I don't.
this building would do me.
I'm in the financial position, thankfully, that we've had success that I don't have to do this. I want to do this.
Yeah.
The best feeling in the world is you're walking into a customer pitch and the vendor who is in there in front of you sees you and says, oh, damn it, it's Stratocash. So in a prior life, I probably flew the pirate flag and raided British trading merchant ships. That being said, big companies in this sector have not been successful. Mm-hmm. And you have very big companies that when you take a small or medium-sized agile tech footprint, you put it in the bureaucracy of that big company, and there's dozens of examples in this industry, and it just never worked.
Yeah, yeah. So you're in it for the long haul, like you say.
I think it's a really fun business. The growth, the expansion, the opportunities are nearly endless, and if in 2 years we can be a billion, in 5 years we can be 3 to 5 billion, the market exists, the opportunity is there. It's up to us to go out and take it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net every day. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.